Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. At the suggestion of Smita Krishna Maharaj, I'm speaking this morning on what I learned in Bengal. So I'm going to have to speak about myself. It's inseparable from what I learned. So please excuse me for that. Yeah, first of all, some background about myself, or at least the self who I identify with this body. I was allowed to join Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON in London in 1975. I first came to India in 1976 to attend the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival and stayed for 6 weeks. And in 1977, August 27th, 22nd to be exact, I went to India with the idea of staying there. Went with Trivik Ram Maharaj. And in 1979, I went to Bangladesh, which, well, you may say, well, that's not exactly India, but it's in some ways more India than India. It's the old culture was there very strongly. So I was quite young, 18 I joined, 20 I went to India to stay, and 22, at the age of 22, I went to Bangladesh. And what did I learn there? I learned so many things, which at the time I didn't realize what I was learning, or how valuable those things are in my life. This isn't going to be a very systematic presentation. It's systematically put in that book, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, from a somewhat different perspective. One thing I learned, and it was very painful, was how British I was. Because I was in this illusion that after joining the movement, I was transcendental and didn't have anything to do with the British way of life or living or acting or thinking. But actually, culture runs very deeply. And although I'd been in mostly in Bengal from 1977 to, what was that? That was about Kartik 1977. Yeah, I came to India in August, and then last darshan of Srila Prabhupada in October 1977. Yeah, and then that was in Kartik. I went to West Bengal. Bengal is divided in Chaitanya Charitamrita. East Bengal is called Banga, and West Bengal is called Gaur. We have the word Gauriya, comes from Gaur. So, West Bengal, I was there from October 77 to about April 79, and with visits to Assam, Bihar, Orissa, in that area, mostly distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. But we didn't really interact with the people so much, because we were just distributing books, and that was the mostly doing that. We did a few programs here and there, but mostly doing that. Visited lots of holy places also. But on the party, there was a few devotees from the West, and none of us spoke more than a few words of Bengali. And the Bengalis who were with us all spoke sufficient English, so that we never bothered to learn the language, or we didn't think it was very important or necessary. Although I did get an idea to start learning. I can remember I was in Tulsi Arati in Calcutta, and we were singing the song, and I realized I could understand all the words, just because it's a very simple song. Anyone can understand the words. Tulasi Krishna Prayasi. Prayasi means dear. Namo Nama. Radha Krishna Seva. You can all understand that. Pabo, I will get. E Abhilashi. Maybe I didn't understand all the words at that time, but Abhilash is another word which we come across often in our Vaishnava literature. It's not commonly used in spoken Bengali. So I realized I could, Abhilash means desire. So I realized I could understand all the words, and then I thought, well, this is a beautiful song, and there are so many beautiful songs, and I'm living in Bengal, and shouldn't be too difficult to learn Bengali. Everyone else around me speaks Bengali, and so I should be able to also. So I thought I should start to learn Bengali, because mostly for the sake of, I didn't think of it for preaching or interacting with people, but then especially for the songs of our acharyas, for appreciating them better. So going to Bangladesh, it's 1779, shortly after the Gaur Purnima festival. And it was completely different it's Bengal, but different in many ways. The people are very different. It's just crossing the border, going over the land border, you can see the people are very different. In West Bengal, people, even though it's majority Hindu, and in East Bengal, Bangladesh, is majority Muslim, but in West Bengal, people tend to be much more uptight and atheistic. Well, there is strong atheistic tendency due to the ascendancy of the Communist Party. The previous chief minister of West Bengal was a communist, Buddhadev Bhattacharya. Yeah. Brahmin, most of the Brahmins are communist in West Bengal. So when he had to open a new bridge, he came there, and all the paraphernalia was there for doing a puja, coconuts and all these things. He just kicked it out of the way. He said, "We don't believe in all these things." But in Bangladesh, you won't find an atheist. And even if there is someone hiding somewhere, he won't say it, because it's just not part of the culture. Everyone believes in God. Majority Muslim population, large Hindu population, and a few Christians and Buddhists who are here and there. So, yeah, in Bangladesh, a different situation. People are much more friendly to foreigners, because that was another thing in West Bengal at that time. There was so much propaganda that ISKCON is CIA, which sounds ridiculous, but many people believed it. And that just as the British came first of all just to do trading, and then they took over the country, so these foreigners have come with the same intent. But in Bangladesh, people are much more friendly, both Muslims and Hindus. We entered the country and traveled around in kami clothes, which means yogi pants, and once in the winter I crossed over the land border into Bangladesh. I was wearing like this yogi pants with a chadar, and the border people were so happy. Oh, he's wearing our clothes, because Westerners don't wear chadars like this generally. So the very nature of preaching there was quite different. We didn't go in the towns, not much in the towns. We had an ashram in Dhaka, the capital. Ashram means a rented house. The landlord lived just opposite. He was, well, maybe he was the only atheist I met. I mean, he wouldn't openly say, but he wasn't much interested in religion. He wanted to have foreigners. I guess one reason was for prestige. Another thing, we had to bring him whiskey, because it's illegal, but not for foreigners. Some things you have to do for preaching in different situations. I never did it, I refused, but others did so. Something. So, a few years ago, devotees had been in Bangladesh, but they were asked to leave after there was an attack on Mayapur by Muslims, and propaganda came out in the Bangladesh newspapers that Western Vaishnavas, the term Vaishnava is known to Muslims also in Bangladesh, because Vaishnavism is the main Hindu, overwhelmingly the main Hindu culture in Bangladesh. In different parts of India you'll find different strains of Hinduism are prominent. I'm saying Hinduism here as a socio-religious term. So in Orissa, Jagannath worship is prominent. In North India, worship of Shiva and Rama is prominent. Everywhere there's worship of Durga in various forms. In Maharashtra, Ganesh worship is most prominent, but Vaishnavism, particularly of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is prominent in among the Vaishnavas of East Bengal. So, they came in the papers that the foreign Vaishnavas had attacked the poor, innocent Muslim villages. So our devotees who were in Bangladesh at that time were asked by the authorities to leave for their own safety, because they didn't want any untoward incidents. So we were going undercover. We'd go to Hindu villages, there are many, many of them. There we would dress like this, but otherwise we were semi-undercover. We weren't going in the towns, because in the towns there were police, which you wouldn't find in the villages, and there were educated people, which you wouldn't find in the villages, hardly at all. And there were telephones, which you wouldn't find in the villages, and there were Muslims in large numbers. So just to play it safe, we went in the villages, and we moved. We generally wouldn't stay more than one day in one village. So if anyone decided to report us, by the time they managed to go somewhere and report us, and if anyone came to see us, we'd already be gone. So we had to interact with the people a lot, for everything. And because there were few of us, we often went alone before we got vehicles. So we would travel on public, so we go alone and village to village, and we had to learn to speak, because if you want to communicate with anyone in any way, more than sign language, then you have to speak. So I learned quite quickly how to speak Bengali. So that's one thing I learned, which has been very helpful for me, especially in writing and researching and learning and so many things. So one thing I learned was how British I was, because the culture in Bangladesh is very, very different. And things like punctuality. I don't think there's any term in Bengali for punctuality. Or privacy. Personal privacy. I mean, it's just the antithesis of Swedish culture, where privacy is sacred. But when you have families living in a house which is basically one or two rooms, and the family is about 13 or 14 people, there's not much question of privacy of any kind. And just like Swedes, so I'm told, value their privacy, Bengalis don't like it. They like to be with people all the time. And they identify themselves as a part of a family, part of a group, part of a village. Individualism is not part of the culture. So the British became prominent in the world by their work ethic. That's one of the factors. But that's not so much there. Work has to be done. If there's at the time of planting rice or transplanting it or harvesting it, there's a lot of work. And at that time everyone will work. But if there's no need of work, then people don't work. Why should you work if you don't have to? And there's not, you can't do that much anyway when you have a limited amount of land and there's no factory to go to, how much work can you do anyway, even if you are a workaholic. So this whole idea of work, do something all the time, it's not there. The whole culture is in many ways much more relaxed. And punctuality, we'd try to fix up some time to begin the program. We'd have programs in the evening and all the people in the village would come. And we say, what time will it begin? And people are saying, that's a strange question. I say, well, evening time. That would be a common reply. Oh, just when everyone comes. When everyone comes, then you begin. That's all. You just wait for everyone to come. Then you begin. That's all. Whenever everyone's ready, then you begin. Because there's no hurry. And often programs would begin late, sometimes after 10 or 11 at night. They begin. And the villagers, they didn't mind because anyway, they didn't have anything to do the next day. The fact that we're doing it every day didn't seem to register with them. So, there's so many factors. The culture is so different. And in the beginning, I was quite dismissive of it. But I gradually realized, well, actually, this is what Srila Prabhupada's talking about, and this is what we read about in Chaitanya Charitamrita. At that time in Bangladesh, in the villages, there wasn't electricity. In some villages, if there was electricity, it would be something remarkable. You'd actually, there's an electric line. Is it? But there'd be an electric line and a bulb, maybe, in some villages. But most of the time there was no electricity anyway. So it would occasionally would come on at very low wattage, so that even the light was there, it wouldn't give much light anyway. And most of the time there was no light. So, and there were no roads in most places except some dirt track. And then naturally there weren't many items. No electricity means no electric fans. There were not many plastic items. And in many ways, you could see that the whole way of life was very similar to what it was at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And you'd see the land stretching out with banana trees and betel nut trees and palm trees. These are the main trees and with fields of rice. And you think that, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan party might just come out of the trees at any time. culture, the kirtan culture is very strong. It's just, what do you do after it gets dark? You sit down and chant Hare Krishna. What else is there to do? So that was Srila Prabhupada's idea in founding these communities that devotees can come together and chant Hare Krishna and hear about Krishna. As long as there's electricity, no one's going to do that. Because, well, some might. But if there's electricity, then there's always something else to do. If there's no electricity, it's somewhat inconvenient. You get used to it, actually. How long does it take to get used to it? About 3 days. That's all. Although in this climate, you have to, there's a lot of work in cutting wood for fuel. But gathering wood also, that's a major task in Bengal in the villages. Wood and cow dung is used for fuel. But then in the evening, people, they come together and they chant Hare Krishna. And that's a great advantage of not having electricity. If you could dare to think about it. So, I made some notes here. Yeah. One thing became very obvious going to India, which is useful for all devotees, helpful for all devotees, and especially to Bangladesh, is that to understand that the Hare Krishna movement is not some small sect, but it is from a cultural or anthropological point of view, it's a major world religion that helps to give devotees faith when they see that there are literally thousands and millions of people who know about Krishna and who worship Krishna. So in the villages in Bangladesh, it was quite amazing how people would welcome us. I mean, really, they would literally, in the villages, it was different in different parts of the country, because even within a small country like that, there are regional cultural differences. So in some places, they'd go more wild than others, but it wasn't unusual for a whole village of people to come out and welcome us and fall at our feet and wash our feet. And the women would be doing their ulus, and there'd be kirtan and jumping up and down, and they're really fired up. For them, it was a very big thing, because they... What was going on in the country, actually the country at that time, we're talking about, 1979, I first went there, so the country known as Bangladesh had only existed for 8 years at the time. Prior to that, it had been part of East Pakistan from 1947 to 1971. It was called East Pakistan. And anyway, that country was formed on the basis of Muslim majority population. So the Hindus, minority population, and the Muslims wanted to convert them all. And they were told that this Hinduism, it's useless, it's all finished, Hinduism is dying. And actually it was generally considered in India that Hinduism was a dying religion. There was an Illustrated Weekly of India, which was the most prominent magazine in English, which all the educated people read. It must have been early 1980s. There was a cover picture. The main story had a photo of Onkar, who was the French pujari at Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. He had a picture of him on the cover with the deities in the background, and with saviors of Hinduism. The idea that Srila, that was the title, that Srila Prabhupada's Western devotees in India were saving Hinduism. So the propaganda in East Bengal at the time, in Bangladesh, from the Muslims, is that Hinduism is dying and everyone in the world is converting to Islam, which they weren't. maybe it's happening now, but they were, at that time it wasn't. So the Hindus were very, they're in a kind of depressed state. But then our devotees from the Western world came and we'd show this movie of the world of Hare Krishna. No, actually that was before that, it was called The Hare Krishna People, the first film which showed devotees having Rath Yatras in different parts of the world and the movement spreading all over, and it was sensational because it was as if they got their life back. That, oh, actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction that this chanting will spread all over the world is coming to pass, and they were very enthusiastic, very grateful, and very enthusiastic. I mean, very, very, very enthusiastic. And you had to have a lot of adrenaline to keep up with it. So, that was quite amazing. What happened when our devotees started traveling around the country and doing programs, simple programs, we'd have kirtan and a lecture. In those days, we would try to find out someone who could speak English, which wasn't that many. So maybe in several villages, there'd be one person and have him translate our lecture. And then we'd show this movie and we had some books. They didn't last very long. It took some time to make an arrangement whereby we could bring in many books. We actually came to Prabhupada Vishnu Swami was leading up the preaching in that area. So a party came. When was that? It was the end of 1979 to Sweden and Denmark for collecting, selling these Oasis records. You remember that? And remember the party? Okay. So, you were in Copenhagen? From 1980. I was there in early 19... I think... No, I left there early 1980. So... anyway, we collected money and got these Mercedes vans, and then we drove books over the border, and sometimes the customs people would, mostly they didn't even search us, and one or two times they looked and they saw the books and they were so bewildered, they couldn't imagine, what are these foreign tourists, who are all these Hindu books for? But anyway, we gave them gifts and this and that, so they liked cinema magazines from West Bengal and things like that. And pens, foreign pens and things like that. So they let us go. And eventually we bought a vehicle that had been used from a German guy who used it for, he would drive from Germany to India via Afghanistan. And both ways in Afghanistan he'd stock up on hashish. And in this way he was making his living. So it had huge compartments, hidden compartments, so it was very useful for smuggling books. It was designed for smuggling. So we had some exciting things. There are all kinds of things. I shouldn't say everything. I already said some things, which after all these years we can say, but I shouldn't say everything. So... we brought books, and then when we brought books, even though most of the people couldn't read, but even those who could read, they were so anxious to get these books because there'd been no Hindu books. They considered us to be Hindus, excuse the term. I don't like it very much. And all of a sudden they had access to these books and we'd get mobbed. Often we'd have to go inside a room and lock the door from inside, and then there'd be bars on the window and you could pass the books out and people put the money in, and it was just like a riot to get the books. Is it like that in Sweden? I don't think so. Not even imaginable. So, yeah, we do these programs and word spread all over there. Just it went by word of mouth all over the country. Wow. That this, there's this Hare Krishna. They'd heard about Mayapur, and now they're here, and it is, often we'd be in a village and there'd be people from different villages trying to pull us to their village, and it was how to handle it. Because they're insistent, and they wouldn't take no for an answer. And then you had to go visit every house in the village and sit down and eat something. Well, we couldn't eat, but we'd solve it by taking a little bit of coconut water in every house. Word spread, and people were very, very enthusiastic. The hospitality was amazing. This idea that people are starving in Bangladesh, well, we weren't starving. It was difficult to not eat too much because everyone wanted to feed us. And even at night, because typical in India is that people eat at night a large meal. And the program would start late, and then I'd take rest around 2 o'clock or something. And then about 3 o'clock, they'd come and wake you up and say, "You didn't eat anything." Because after the program's over, then they'd start to cook because they didn't want to miss the program. And then, you have to get up and eat something, otherwise they won't let you rest because they have to feed you. It's their duty to feed you. So many things. I learned to cook. Well, actually, I was cooking in, even in England, I was cooking for the deities and devotees and on traveling Sankirtan in West Bengal also. But then, so many different preparations. Vegetables, especially in Bengal. So many vegetables, so many varieties of shark. Shark means what's called in English spinach. But in English, spinach means one item, or one or two. But in Bengal, it's so many. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, it's mentioned how different varieties of shark, which are very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So many varieties. Many of them not even cultivated. You just walk outside and you look around and they're just growing here and there. And you just pick them and cook them and offer it to Krishna. So many vegetables and so many different ways to cook them, and all very simple and very little oil, very healthy diet actually. The first movie was the Hare Krishna people, and the next movie came after that, The World of Hare Krishna. And there was a scene from Bangladesh, and that Yadubha Prabhu came to Bangladesh for shooting that. Then we would show that, it's another movie we'd show of New Vrindavan. We showed of New Vrindavan. We'd show cooking. In that movie, there's a scene of cooking puris in ghee. And when that was shown, all the people would just, you could hear everyone just gasp. They're cooking puris in ghee because ghee was, people couldn't afford ghee. They'd maybe keep ghee, a little bottle of ghee this much, to give to special guests, which they'd give to us and put on the rice. And they couldn't imagine having this much ghee and cooking in it. So, I made some notes here. Yeah, kirtan called kirtan everywhere, amazing kirtans. Now in ISKCON we have a lot of expert mridanga players. But at that time, playing the kartals and that's all. And maybe some saying, ding, 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 ding. But then in Bangladesh, so many variety, how they're playing in so many different ways and so expert. Although actually nowadays I prefer 1, 2, 3 because it's all so click, 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 click. So I'm back to 1, 2, 3. But I don't play myself.
So many songs, and it's quite common that people, they just know so many songs of Narottam Das, and you maybe in a lecture you'd quote some song and all the people already know it, that's still there. And just a few years ago I was giving an initiation in Mayapur, and I was giving a... So I gave one devotee named Brajendra Nanda, and then I said, all the devotees were, Brajendra Nandan Ji, and everyone just joined in. Shachi Shuta Hoilo She. Everyone knows it. They all know the song. It's just part of the culture. Just one, many things in the mind now. Something came to my mind. Once we're at a festival, just outside Chittagong. It's an annual festival for Lord Shiva, actually, at Chandranath. That's, it's an ancient temple of Lord Shiva, so. We were there, and then we were there selling books, 3-day festival, then it was over, and then people were leaving. I just remember one morning, seeing the morning after that, it's early in the morning, one man was just sitting, playing the harmonium, just by himself. Not in a group, but just by himself, just for his own spiritual, out of his own spiritual pleasure. He was sitting, playing harmonium, and singing with full gusto this Nitai Pada Kamala song. Without reading any book or any such thing, just so. It just struck me, this is so nice, that people, they know all these songs, and they just, that's what they do. Just like if you have some spare time, what do? You turn on the TV, or take your dog for a walk, or something like this, but what do these people do? They sit down and they chant for Krishna. And that's what people expected us to do in the villages. They expected us to do a lot of chanting, because that's what they did. And we would have kirtan in the morning, we'd be staying in someone's house, and then at midday there'd be bhog offering, and we would again we'd do kirtan, we'd sing different songs suitable for the time of day, and then the evening we'd have a Harinam procession around the village, and again all the people would come out, and the women would throw water and do their uludhani, all this stuff. And a lot of banging of gongs and a lot of excitement. Again, you need a lot of adrenaline to keep up with it, especially as you didn't get much chance to sleep because the programs would be late, and then often it was difficult even to chant japa because everyone wanted to personally speak with you. And it's difficult when there's a few hundred people living in a village and they all want to personally speak with you. And they all ask the same questions. What is your name? Which country do you come from? And what is your educational qualification? And so on and so on. Eventually I got written in Bengali on a piece of paper and laminated it and gave it to people. They were quite happy with that. Just saved me having to say the same thing over and over again. How many brothers and sisters do you have? Common question. Because it's a very family-oriented culture. Especially the mother in Bengal, ma, you'll see everywhere written ma, which means mother, which means ma Kali, for those who are worshippers of Kali, and also their own mother, who they see as sacred. Not that people are very theologically deep or have any, not much philosophical, not much philosophy, full stop. But there's this idea that mother is sacred. And actually, in Bangladesh especially, I came to really know what motherhood is, because my own mother, bless her soul, was not... she was a bit rough in her personality, and Although looking back on it, I was just too obtuse to notice it. But I mean, there were so many. When I see my childhood, there are many good mothers. Of course, they didn't know any Vedic culture, but in the function of motherhood, there are many good mothers. But I just didn't. I was just too absorbed in myself to notice any such things. But in Bengal, it's just it's a mother-centered culture, and the mothers are very motherly. The men are men and the women are women. It's not that they're all the same. There's no the women don't dress in jeans and dress like men and cut their hair unless they're widows. Children are like, they're just like considered extremely precious. And that's everywhere. People love children, but especially in Bengal, there's this, the kind of, in India in general, the kind of love that is lavished on children. One of my disciples recently, he was in Ayodhya, the place of Lord Rama. And he said he saw, because that's a communal place of communal tension, there's always armed guards there, especially around the birthplace of Lord Rama. And females also, because the idea is there that in India also, that women should be police as much as men, and also because for searching women, you require to have women. So this disciple told me, he was just in Ayodhya, and the women were there with machine guns and all this heavy paraphernalia. But then he saw in the line there was one woman going with a young baby, and these women with the machine guns, they were patting the baby and smiling at them. You know, they're still women, even though they've got machine guns. So but it's not like that in America, for instance. You see, the women police, they're just as butchy as the men. But in India, it's, at least that culture is still there, that women are women. So often the women would ask me, the older women would come up, and they'd ask a standard question, how many brothers and sisters do you have? What is your father? Where is your mother? And this and that. And they just, it was just inconceivable to them how I could leave my mother and go to a long distant land. How can you do that? Many people do that in Bengal. They go from the village to the city to work, but they regularly go back to the village. Some go even every weekend, which means for one day only if they live close to the city. And in their wallet, they'll all have a picture of their, photo of their mother. And yeah, it was just inconceivable to them how I could leave my mother. Although in the West, it's quite common if someone, a young man is at home, then the parents will say, okay, get out. We've looked after you long enough. Now you have to look after yourself. So you can see it's a very, very different culture, which emphasizes the family and the group. Everyone has to work together cooperatively. Opposite to the idea that every man is an island, no man is an island. So I hardly started, and it's almost 9 o'clock. So what should we do? Should I continue next time or what? I mean, I could go on, but I might be here for a long time. So shall I make another session next time? Next time, I guess, if I'm still alive and you're all still alive, that would be Monday. Yeah, I could go on speaking, on and on and on. Well, in the afternoon, I'm writing. Yeah. I was going to speak on something else, something philosophical. Is Smita Krishna Maharaj here? So I could continue on Monday?
Monday, no.
I could do, but I'm also still British. Punctuality. I want to get to my writing. Are you all leaving here? You could come on Monday morning? Is it? Okay, well actually most of these points are in that book, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, although the spoken medium is different to the written medium. That's what I was asking. Maharaj is supposed to give class. Smita Krishna Maharaj is supposed to give class tomorrow morning, isn't it? Okay, you negotiate it. Any questions about what I said now? And then it could go on forever. Yeah, it's changed now. Still worth visiting. Anyone want to go with me? I'm planning to go next February. It's changed. Many good roads have been built. Bridges have been built. Electricity is in most of the villages, which means that people watch TV. The old mud houses, you won't see much. Now it's brick houses. The economy is developed. There are brick houses, which are much hotter than the mud houses, but they last. Our movement is well known and established. We have many centers there, all over Bangladesh. In that way it's changed. And inside the country, I travel, I don't enter the country in what we would call devotional clothes, although nowadays we're not supposed to say that, because according to some people, there's no such thing as Vaishnav dress. That's a funny idea. But inside the country, I travel in just wearing these clothes, just going in and out of the country. So it's more relaxed in that way. Although this Islamicism is rearing its ugly head, which wasn't there before. So it has changed, but it's still, the culture is very strong. But everywhere I'm seeing that so many cultural usages, which in one generation they're lost in India and in Bangladesh, which people used to follow. Small things, you could say, things. Things like not giving things or taking things with your left hand. Those things are breaking down for some reason. Why it should break down in the village, I don't know. It's the influence of Kali Yuga. But, yeah, it's still good education to spend time. To visit is one thing. To spend time is something else. And to learn a language. Not everyone can do that. If you can learn the language, you can interact with people much better. You can also preach much more clearly. Not only linguistically, but you can tell people practically anything. I mean, you can tell them why you're adopting this demoniac culture and all that. You can practically tell them they're demons and everything if you say it in their own language, because they accept that the fact that you've learned their language means that you respect them and you take them seriously.
Would you say, you're preaching, but at the same time you're learning from them. So how is it to preach to people who are basically already established in the tradition?
Oh, very good question. How do you preach to people who already know it all? Well, they don't know it all. But it's a very different kind of preaching. It's more encouraging them to take up their own culture. Now, they're saying people, they do kirtan and this and that, but there's no proper guidance, or there wasn't any proper guidance. So for instance, one major point is that almost everyone in Bangladesh eats fish, even those people who chant Hare Krishna. I came to learn about many of the deviations that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur fought against. I was right in the middle of it all. The culture is there, but the proper understanding is not there. So, to get people to understand that, especially when they're not very philosophically minded, it's a very different thing. The main thing seems to be encourage them and to gently push them in the right direction, and then gradually some people take it up. But it's nowadays among Bangladeshi Hindus, it's known, whereas previously it wasn't known, that a Vaishnav should not eat fish. The proper standard is that. I could speak more about that. That's a major thing. Yeah, I could speak a lot about that, maybe next time.
And were you also learning, I mean, in the US, you're partly learning, because sometimes young enthusiastic devotees, you tend to be a little arrogant. Because if all the teachers kind of respect the humility, and you see that the people you treat, they're not actually humans, they're actually
Well, we're living among people. I mean, just living among people. It's not just a matter of talking to someone and then going somewhere else. But we're living with the people and seeing how they live, being with them. So you have to adjust to a large extent. Although it was difficult to, you know, everywhere, the smell of fish and seeing people in the bazaar, fish being sold, and cutting fish with all the blood here and there. It's not pleasant. Difficult to tell people that they shouldn't do this. So I'll finish there for now. Hare Krishna. And hope to continue. And yeah, I did cover in that book Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, so some points.